Today, does facial recognition technology risk turning us into a Big Brother society? And the UK's third terrorist attack in 3 months. Alex, I hear you're going to show me something about facial recognition.
I'm going to show you something.
Okay.
So let's take a selfie of you first.
Should I take my headphones off? Okay, ready? Here we go. Okay, all right, now what?
Navigate over to Yandex.com.
Yandex.com, what's that?
Yandex is the simple, lazy version. It's Russia's Google. But it also has, just like Google does, an image search platform. And it also means you can do a reverse image search. You can upload an image to Yandex and it will perform a reverse search on it. Yandex goes one step further. Unlike Google, it also uses a very specific form of AI to try and recognize who is in the image. And so what that means is if I put this picture of you up and do a reverse image search...
I've got no makeup on.
It pulls up
it's
every
found
other
me.
Image of you on the net.
How
click on
any
one of them.
Does it do that?
And it does that by recognizing you and by searching specifically for your face across its entire database.
But does it have my name? It does.
We did that with a selfie that I took on your laptop in front of you. If I'd taken a sneaky creep shot of you on the tube instead, it would still have worked just as well. If I'd seen you in a bar and
thought... Oh my God, is this facial recognition?
This is facial recognition in action.
Ever feel like you're being watched? Increasingly, you are. Cameras could now be tracking you at a football match or concert, out at a bar with friends, or just walking down the road to get home. In the past 2 weeks, the Metropolitan Police have started using live cameras in London, and a leaked Home Office paper suggests 10 other forces are trialling this technology too. Officers think it could revolutionise the fight against crime. And after another terror attack this week, there will be increasing pressure for improved surveillance. But campaigners warn that we could be ushering in the kind of society George Orwell envisaged in his dark novel 1984, without pausing to ask what it means. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, should we be scared of facial recognition technology? Alex Hearn, UK technology editor. Facial recognition technology is here. It doesn't feel futuristic today. But when it was first thought up in the 1960s, it must have been unimaginable. How did they come up with it?
In one way, it's very obvious, right? How do people recognise other people? Usually by their faces. Biometric ID. The first great use of biometrics was fingerprints. In the 19th century, we realised that fingerprints were unique for everyone. With faces, there didn't seem to be sort of a huge need to turn to a scientific method for that. The big conceptual breakthrough for faces was realising that rather than describing a face in the way that a police photo fit might expect it, you know, they had thick, bushy eyebrows, no thicker, and they were quite close together, a bit closer, no too close. Instead, what you can do is you can come up with a series of measurements that describe the unique features of a face numerically that can then be compared mathematically and stored in a computer system. And that was the first stage of breakthrough for facial recognition in the 60s.
So who funded it? Why?
In a roundabout way, the CIA.
What do you mean in a roundabout way?
The CIA doesn't tend to fund things directly if it can avoid it. But there was a huge amount of intelligence money flowing into this because the possibilities were very clear. It took a long time for it to be useful. What we didn't have was image recognition software, handing a face to a computer and having the computer go, okay, those are the eyes, those are the nose, here's the distance between the eyes and the nose. All of that calculation still had to be done by hand and you would feed it into a computer as a long, long string of numbers. You know those memory games that you play with kids?
Yeah.
You have 100 pairs of faces. Even if they were all flipped face up right at the beginning, for you or I, it would be quite a tricky thing to stare at a grid of 200 pairs of people and sort them one by one. But you could do the calculations on each one, move them aside, do it on each one, move it aside. And then a computer could do that final bit, pairing them up very, very quickly. It really took another 50 years before that automatic categorization made facial recognition something that would be useful.
Film directors imagining the future always seem pretty clear that facial recognition technology would be a thing. It's been used in Minority Report.
Identity confirmed.
Good morning, Mr. Hunt.
In Terminator.
I'll be back.
RoboCop.
The future of law enforcement.
Why do you think it's been such a staple of sci-fi?
When we're imagining the future of computing, the first thing we always do is assume that things we find easy will one day be easy for a computer. And facial recognition is a really obvious example of that.
And as you say, it was still fairly basic early on. In today's term, when was the first big breakthrough?
It was progressive breakthroughs at the beginning of the 2010s. Really what we had was a conceptual twist. Faces have expressions. Faces move in the real world. Faces are lit differently. All of these things make it hard and borderline impossible to sit down and come up with an exhaustive list of every single possible situation that you might have to recognize an eyeball in. And so instead, what you do is you use machine learning. And it brings us to where we are now.
Which is where?
A situation where, by and large, computers can definitely recognize eyes, noses, mouths automatically without any human intervention, not just from perfect passport-style photos, but from grainy CCTV footage. We are now in a world where facial recognition isn't just about, I have two good images, are they of the same person? But is, I've caught someone in the background of a CCTV footage and I want to see if I can find them on Facebook.
Okay, so for a long time, facial recognition technology was being developed, but was really on the fringes. But now it seems clear that intelligence agencies and the police see it as really useful. When did it get good enough to make that jump?
Really, I think it got good enough quite early on. Facial recognition has always had quite a potential for finding needles in haystacks. It's good, but not great. And good but not great is often good enough. If I have a face of a suspect I'm looking for and I have 2 million mugshots on my national police database, a mediocre technology that can return 1,000 mugshots is incredible because suddenly 1,000 mugshots an officer can go through in a day. The problem comes as all of the frictions get taken out of this system. You know, if you've been arrested and booked and told to stand in front of a plain background, you don't know when you're on CCTV. You don't know who's accessed that CCTV, and you don't know who's run facial recognition systems to match you against other times when your image was taken without your awareness or permission.
Absolutely. And you know, for example, when you've given a fingerprint, they could just catch you in the street with your face.
Exactly. And it's that passive, that frictionless use of it that is what's had privacy campaigners concerned.
And because of everything you're telling me, you can see why it's a potentially really useful tool when it comes to crime.
Yeah.
So tell me how the police have used it.
In the UK, the big precedent has been set by Cardiff Police Force, which decided to use it as part of its policing around the Champions League final. They scanned the faces of every fan arriving and checked them against a database of known troublemakers to keep violent fans out.
It was a great success and allowed us to better understand how the systems respond in an operational environment and help improve our understanding of the technology and how it can be best deployed.
That was taken for court review and was eventually upheld.
So that's when they ruled that the police in the UK would legally be able to use facial recognition.
And now in London, the Met Police have taken up the mantle and have announced that they're going to be formalising their use of the same technology.
In what way?
In a way that's quite limited. To be fair to the Met, if the police were going to use it, this is how you'd want them to use it. They are going to be setting up cameras at hotspots around the capital, places with high foot traffic, passively scanning the faces of everyone who walks by and seeing if any of those faces match previously gathered faces that the Met already has for wanted troublemakers. The idea is that it's a single step up from a police officer on the beat who's memorized a few wanted people, spots one of them and goes, "Oh, you, stop," and makes chase.
What the Met Police are doing right now is limited. Presumably the fear is what could happen in the future.
The problem with the frictionless nature of facial recognition is that it suddenly becomes quite easy to start having a database of every single minor offence that you've ever done on CCTV with your name next to it, stored automatically. And who could oppose that? Because they're all crimes. So you should save them because it's evidence of a crime. And then suddenly you have a situation where rather than the police arresting people who they have decided it's worth spending resources to catch, the police have a database of every single Londoner doing a crime, because there's that quote from the French Revolution, "Give me 6 words written by an honest man and I'll find something to hang him." Facial recognition is, "Give me 6,000 hours of footage of every person in London." And yeah, you'll find things that you can use to get them in trouble with the law.
Give me examples of where mistakes have been made.
It has false positives and it has false negatives. That means it will highlight faces that are not of the same two people, and it will miss two faces that are of the same person. One of the worst problems is those mistakes are not evenly distributed. A long history of racial bias in how these technologies are created and tested means that facial recognition tends to be much better at identifying white people than black people. Amazon accidentally has been very useful for us in finding this out, because the company has a public facial recognition engine called Recognition, but spelt with a K. That means researchers are able to pull it and feed pictures in themselves and see how it goes. For instance, they fed every NFL player in America into it, and 27 of them were wrongly flagged as criminals. NFL players are more likely than your typical American to be black, and the 27 players who were flagged were more likely than your typical NFL player to be black.
What? So basically,
it felt like
it
the facial recognition
system. It can't tell the difference
system.
Between black faces.
If you upload a database of criminal faces and ask Amazon's facial recognition system to match your own new database of non-criminals to it, when there should be no overlap, it will make mistakes, and it turns out that those mistakes it made had a racial bias. It was more likely to make a mistake if the face was of a black person than a white person. And we see those errors all across facial recognition research. Similarly, a much, much simpler thing, guessing gender from faces had a racial bias. Black women were more likely to be automatically misgendered as men than white women were.
In follow-up studies we did, we even showed that Amazon was not getting Oprah's face correct.
If you're failing on Oprah's face, you cannot have very good software.
I would question it highly.
This all goes back to how these data sets were built up in the first place. They tend to be made through large scrapes of public domain material with an emphasis on quantity, not quality. And it's only once these systems were put into practice that critics pointed out that they had a huge racial disparity in their accuracy.
I.e. the robots are racist.
I.e. the robots are racist.
Although maybe the Russian robots are less racist, because Yandex got me in a second.
It did.
I guess one big concern, human rights concern, would be whether there's a risk the police use this against protesters.
Seasoned protesters will know that the Met Police already has an entire unit, the Forward Intelligence Team.
It's the FIT team. Let's go and say hello to the FIT team.
That is dedicated to surveilling protests. They are visible in blue jackets at protests taking pictures of activists.
Yeah, but why are you taking pictures of people standing around for?
What this technology allows them to do is, rather than having individuals with cameras honing in on, you know, the troublemakers who are smashing windows, it allows them to just store a database of everyone, the 2 million people who go to a widely attended protest, and see if any of them overlap with the 33 people who went to a sparsely attended protest the next day, and build up a database of people who've done nothing to draw attention to themselves other than be in the same large crowds at the same time.
That's the UK, but this is being used in a far more aggressive way elsewhere in the world.
Today in China, we have mass surveillance of its citizens.
The country has ambitious plans to develop a vast national surveillance system based on facial recognition. The primary means will be a vast network of CCTV cameras. 170 million are already in place, and an estimated 400 million new ones will be installed over the next 3 years. The authorities insist this program will allow them to improve security for citizens. And if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear.
What's happening in China?
The Chinese state has been the most aggressive in the world about its usage of facial recognition technology. Successfully so. It has normalized the use of facial recognition both for security purposes narrowly and also in society at large. China is a place where you can pay using your face.
What do you mean you can pay using your face? What, do I go up to the shop and I'm like, I'll have that, and they just look at the computer, scan my face?
Yeah, your face is recognized as you and your account is then debited.
You know what? Every time you come in here, Alex, you floor me. I can't get over that.
It's a heck of a thing.
It's a great thing for someone like me who always loses their credit card.
This is the thing, right? But then at the same time, China is also a nation where just this month, a Chinese city was criticized for its overreach. It decided to launch on a name and shame scheme for people who left the house in their pajamas. And a picture of you wandering around town in your pajamas and dressing gown was put on billboards with your name next to it.
But who's running that scheme?
The state was.
It's not illegal to go out in your pajamas, is it?
I mean, illegal is a looser term in China than the UK. Rule of law is narrower and the state is not as constrained by rights.
Wow. That sort of intrusiveness makes you understand why, if you did add facial recognition technology to the mix, we should be really worried.
Pajama shaming is one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is the massive overreach in Shaanxi province, where China is essentially conducting ethnic cleansing against the Uyghur minorities.
Chinese authorities have used facial recognition to more efficiently pick them out and have sent hundreds of thousands of them to re-education camps, calling it a war on terror.
Their facial recognition is used in its most overbearing sense.
That is terrifying. And if we just bring it back to the UK for a minute, where the Met Police, as you say, Herb, announced beginning this NeoFace live facial recognition tech, they say people will be aware when they're using it.
Yeah.
Will we?
So what they're doing is they're putting up posters like, you're entering a facial recognition area. At the same time, the Met is also sort of using its powers to fine people who hide their faces walking through that area.
If I'm going to cover my face, I'll cover my face. It's not for them to tell me not to cover my face. I've got a now £90 fine. There you go. Look at that. Thanks, Lex. £90. Well done.
They have implied, though not said out loud, that if you see the poster and do a U-turn and walk the other way, that's suspicious activity that might result in you being detained and questioned anyway. One of the problems that I see in all of this, though, is that the Met has been very good about articulating why it thinks it should be allowed to use this narrow version of facial recognition, but it's reserved the rights to expand it. And we've not really had a conversation about whether or not the Met should be legally barred from building a Zhanjing-style system. It's very, very easy for this to spiral out of control extremely quickly, and in 5 years' time for us to look back and go, well, it's too late to stop it now, but it would have been nice maybe if we'd had the conversation before we launched it rather than after.
It definitely sounds like thin end of the wedge. I mean, what has the public reaction been?
The public reaction has varied. On the ground at the test sites, I've been surprised by how many people do seem perturbed by the signs. Civil rights groups like Big Brother Watch have campaigned against this and have at least received some coverage.
It's psychologically unhealthy when people know they're being watched in every aspect of the public realm.
People do seem to be approaching this with a level of skepticism, which I think is important.
It sounds like it might be unstoppable to some degree. Can we rebel? Can we fool facial recognition?
One of my favorite things about fooling facial recognition is, unlike a lot of tech, it looks properly futuristic. The way you fool facial recognition technology is fundamentally by making it difficult for a computer to see your face. We've seen a few examples of that already. One end involves trying to dazzle the cameras themselves, so you can get some jazzy spectacles that have within them ultra-bright infrared LEDs that block photosensor but don't block human eyes. That's quite nice. At the other end, almost a decade ago now, an artist called Adam Harvey created CV Dazzle Camouflage, I suppose, a combination of hairstyles and makeup techniques that mean that a facial recognition system simply cannot see your face as such. They're not everyday looks, put it that way. But if you really, really like asymmetric hairstyles and large black and white spots on your face, you can pull it off.
Or have a nose job.
Or a nose job. I mean, and this is actually a thing that has come up with facial recognition. People have had cosmetic surgery in China and found themselves locked out of the ability to use their smile and pay accounts.
It seems to me the possibilities of facial recognition technology are vast. Some of the examples include a comedy club using it to charge by the laugh.
Each chuckle costs about 38 cents with a maximum total charge of $30 if you're watching.
In another example, I've heard of it being used to help track down missing dogs.
Care division is offering facial recognition technology for dogs. It's called Finding Rover, and the app allows.
And then there are the much more sinister examples that you've been giving us, some of which have led to an international outcry.
The federal government has warned the states to reconsider any plans to use facial recognition in schools. The controversial.
In the summer of 2019, 2 million people took to the streets of Hong Kong to protest China's authoritarian rule, knocking down a facial recognition tower in the process.
That tower. But we don't have to push ahead at this rate, do we? There are places that have restricted its use in California, for example, San Francisco, Oakland, San Diego. What have they done, and could others follow suit?
I think so. Those places have launched narrow bans for now. In that very American way, the bans are constraining the state, while private sector use is largely unregulated. In Europe, we're currently at around the opposite situation. It's quite hard for the private sector to use facial recognition technology without at least nominal consent. You can see, for instance, that Facebook took a long time to launch facial recognition features it did in America, and when it did, it required opt-in consent.
But even in America, things are very different state to state, and Facebook has had issues there too, hasn't it?
Facebook has actually taken one of its largest privacy fines in the US ever as we record this. It was fined $550 million for breaching an Illinois state law about biometric ID. Illinois has some of the strongest privacy laws in the US, and one of those laws requires companies to gain explicit consent from users before they store biometric details. Facial recognition is useful for law enforcement, and privacy activists are only going to be able to delay rather than prevent its implementation. The hope is that those bans, the moratoria, the delays allow us to actually sit down and go, what do we want the constraints on this to be, and how do we enable this tech without sleepwalking into a surveillance state?
And that's facial recognition technology, but what other possibilities are there?
There's a whole host of other similar technologies. From a footage of someone speaking in a crowded room, you can automatically read their lips using AI techniques and work out what they're saying, even if you have no sound recording of them.
So in theory, we could get to a position where the police could have a CCTV of two people talking, no sound, and submit that in court.
Absolutely. You can use a technique called gait analysis to identify them that way, even if you never see their face. People have unique ways of walking, which we think may be just as recognisable as a face or a fingerprint.
That is so freaky.
How much do we want people to be able to know about us without us telling them? It is really likely that we are very soon, in lifetime terms, going to be in a society where the technological answer to that is everything. You can know far, far more than you would ever be comfortable telling a stranger just from passively observing you with a large network of CCTV cameras. We need to think about what that means before it happens, not after.
Alex, as ever, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
That was The Guardian's UK technology editor, Alex Hearn, who has written all about this on theguardian.com. Do read his pieces. In this piece, we spoke about a study by the American Civil Liberties Union relating to Amazon facial recognition software. We went to the company, and a spokesperson for Amazon Web Services dismissed the claims in the research as misrepresenting Amazon recognition, claiming, when used with the recommended 99% confidence threshold and as one part of a human-driven decision, facial recognition technology can be used for a long list of beneficial purposes, including the identification of criminals. Coming up, another terrorist attack in the UK.
Hello, I'm Max Rushton, and this is Football Weekly. We cover the football, all the football, from the serious...
It was the most cowardly, disgusting press conference I've ever seen.
...to the analysis...
When you put them in into the actual games, Liverpool are getting more points against XG than Leicester.
...to the nonsense.
And I will be having £5 on him to be called a boot winner.
What?
What?
Christian Benteke? Listen to Football Weekly from The Guardian, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Boris Johnson wants to tighten terror legislation after the UK's third terrorist attack in 3 months. On Sunday, Islamist extremist Sudesh Aman stabbed two people in Streatham, South London, barely a week after his release from prison. One victim was in a life-threatening condition, but is now stable. Aman was shot and killed by police on the scene. Here's The Guardian's Home Affairs correspondent, Jamie Grierson.
The reason why police got to Aman so quickly, it appears, is that he was under active surveillance by undercover police. Aman was a convicted terrorist offender, and he had spent just over a year in prison for a series of terrorism offences around the possession of and dissemination of terrorist materials, things like gory beheading videos that he was in possession of. Aman was sentenced to a 3.5-year sentence, of which he had to serve half, and he was released after spending a year in prison. It's understood that he was considered to be particularly dangerous still, and therefore was placed under quite restrictive and stringent licensing conditions, including a nighttime curfew. The undercover police surveillance would have been part of the conditions of his release, which is very intensive and resource intensive, so it's only reserved for people considered to be the most dangerous. This was the third terror attack to happen in the last 3 months, the first of which was the attack by Usman Khan on London Bridge, in which two people sadly died. There was a second terrorist-related attack which happened within the walls of Whitemoor Prison. This is the first time a terror attack has happened within a prison, and the investigation into that is currently ongoing. A common thread running through the three attacks is they were all perpetrated by individuals who have had previous convictions for terror-related offences. The questions asked after these sorts of events and the questions being asked after this recent attack in Streatham are, why was he out on the streets if he was considered to be a risk? Why are individuals like Aman still conducting these sort of attacks when they have been in prison for a period of time? And what can be done to prevent these sort of attacks happening in the future? The government's focus with Usman Khan at London Bridge and now with Sudesh Aman in Streatham appears to be to focus on the length of time he was in prison and the point at which he can be released. However, among criminal justice circles, there is a debate about the effectiveness of the rehabilitation programs that they are placed on in prison. It seems that the approach so far isn't cutting through to address the root causes of extremism and terrorism. And there are calls for bigger picture issues to be explored. Opposition politicians, academics and so on have called on the government to look at connections between mental health, deprivation and poverty, foreign policy, poor educational outcomes, the impact of anti-radicalisation programmes on minority communities, and the connection between all those things and extremism and terrorism. This is a complicated issue which warrants a complicated response, and coming up with policy for tackling extremism or terrorism within 24 hours of a terrorist attack happening is just not going to do it.
That was Jamie Grierson. Be sure to follow the debate on our response to this terror attack as it unfolds on the website. That's it for today. My thanks to Alex Hearn and Jamie Grierson. This episode was produced by Chika Ayres and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Kukutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.